Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday live in now suddenly sunny Los Angeles, 75 degrees. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, iHeartRadio, XM Sirius Channel 83. Joy Taylor is joining me. We have some breaking news, potentially. Joy, how are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm very excited for today's show. There's a lot going on today.
There is a ton going on today. Light at the end of the tunnel for the virus. A lot of reporters are bleak and dark, and it's the end of the world. We're getting very good news. Good news with a lot of things happening. And how about this? WFAN Radio. Reporting this morning, Browns-Vikings in discussion on a trade that would send OBJ to the Vikings for a couple of picks next year. Trade's not done. Deal has been discussed. Now, OBJ is a very interesting player. Remember in New York? Oh, he's not going to get traded. We are not trading him. They squashed all the rumors. He got traded. OBJ's got big boy agents working for him. There's a lot of misinformation on the market with OBJ. I will say this, funny OBJ story. I've never thought he fit in Cleveland. He partied in Paris. He has a house in Bel Air in Hollywood in Los Angeles, either both or one. And he lived in New York. Cleveland's not his vibe, and I never thought it fit. About 3 or 4 days ago, could have been longer, I had a discussion with one of my bosses. There was a dog in his yard. He didn't know whose dog it was. Moments later, OBJ walked into his yard. Hey, there's my dog. There's my OBJ local LA story. He's an LA guy. He's a New York guy. He's a party in Paris guy. Doesn't fit in Cleveland. This is great for OBJ. It's great for everybody. But OBJ played nice. He's an icon. LeBron's an icon. He left Cleveland twice. This is not a good fit for him. It's the supermodel marries a plumber, and the plumber has to overcompensate, feels desperate and clingy, and at some point the supermodel's like, you're wearing me out, give me space. Cleveland has overcompensated day one for OBJ. Baker Mayfield's stats when he tries to throw to OBJ are dreadful. Why? Because he's throwing to him when he's not open. He's trying to make it work because Baker Mayfield knows that OBJ is an icon and an all-time talent, and it's not a great fit. They've been overcompensating in Cleveland day one. This is great for OBJ. He's not a kid that deals with chaos. He was never a problem at LSU. He was never a problem in New York. Then New York got rid of Tom Coughlin. Chaos entered the building, and he struggled with it. I talked to him about this one time for a half hour. We talked. FaceTime. And then he goes to Cleveland. Chaos. Cleveland was never a good fit for his personality. Minnesota's a great fit. Winning culture, great front office, lots of stability, veteran head coach, a quarterback that's been in the league that gets the ball out in time. They wouldn't depend on him. They've got a good running back in Delvin Cook. They've got Adam Thielen. They've got two good tight ends. They've upgraded their offensive line. He would work right in, no chaos, grown-ups in the building, in a division where Green Bay is really good and Minnesota. Remember, the Vikings are in a Super Bowl window. One playmaker for them can make the difference. Cleveland's not in a Super Bowl window. Cleveland's window is, we got to get this Baker Mayfield thing right. We got to make this kid work. And this is great for Cleveland. This is not bad for Cleveland. It's great for Cleveland. When you're in a relationship and you're desperately trying to make it work, that's not a good relationship. You cannot have an uneven relationship. Boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, team player, it doesn't work. OBJ doesn't fit Cleveland. And Cleveland has been overcompensating day one. Baker Mayfield's got plenty of weapons. They got to get this kid right. Now, Baker drives me nuts, but he is an NFL quarterback, and he's good for the league. He's polarizing. He's controversial. He's good for the league. Baker is good for the league. His personality would drive me nuts. But he's good for the league, and he is a franchise quarterback. And I know, Cleveland, you think I'm nuts on this. This is a great potential trade for Cleveland. Remember, you told me John Dorsey was great. I said he wouldn't last long. I was right. You told me Freddie Kitchens was going to work. I told you it wasn't going to work. I was right. You said Baker's absolutely a number one pick. I said, no, he's not. He's a franchise quarterback. He's not a number one pick. He's not. I was right. So I've been nothing but right. You've been nothing but wrong. This is great for Cleveland. This is great for Cleveland. They just picked up in free agency a very good tight end, Austin Hooper. Now they have David Njoku and Austin Hooper, two excellent tight ends. Probably the best two tight end group in the league. They have two really good running backs. They have Jarvis Landry's a star receiver, and it's the deepest wide receiver draft in years. After they get a tackle with their first pick, go draft receivers and one linebacker. This has never been a healthy relationship. It has always been unbalanced. Icon and dumpster fire, full of chaos. Now, I do think Cleveland just hired Kevin Stefanski. I think he's the right coach. I think he's going to work. I think he's going to add stability. I really, really like their roster when they get left tackle solved. But I have been saying this now. This is the ultimate Colin was right. I have been saying this now for, Joy as my witness, for a year. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. Cleveland's trying to wedge it in. Everybody's overcompensating. Anytime OBJ has a drop pass, you know, it's my fault. The weather was bad. You're overcompensating. Let's get him to Minnesota. So OBJ wins because he gets structure and he flourishes with it. Minnesota wins because they're in a Super Bowl window. They need another playmaker, potentially. And Cleveland wins because they got to get Baker Mayfield right, and he's not good with OBJ. He thinks he is. He's not. He thinks a lot of things. He's done a lot of things he thinks are right. Calling out the medical staff. They're not. Baker, trust me, you had your birthday yesterday. This is your birthday present. It was Baker Mayfield's birthday yesterday. This is his present. You got Njoku, Austin Hooper, two good backs. You're going to have a new left tackle. You've got a right tackle. You got Jarvis Landry. You'll draft another wide receiver. I mean, it's literally lining up perfect for Cleveland. It's perfect. They're going to get a couple of picks next year if this thing goes through. Now, according to the report, the deal is not done. And that's fine. It may not happen. But don't tell me, well, everybody is saying, Jay Glazer this morning, he has big news tonight. Jay Glazer this morning, big news, said this is not the news, it's something else. But he didn't say it couldn't happen. And I think it should happen. And happy birthday to Baker Mayfield. A day after your birthday, this is potentially, you don't get it yet. You don't get it yet. It's almost like when you were a little kid and maybe you had a real serious parent. And, you know, you wanted a toy truck or you wanted a cool toy and your parents got you a winter jacket and you're like 11 years old and you're like, that's a terrible birthday present. And then on a really cold day, you wore the jacket and that was the best present you ever had. Yeah, you're a little kid. You want something fun. Your parents didn't get you something fun for your birthday. They got you something responsible. And then later on, you're like, boy, that's a good present. Boy, I needed that winter jacket. That's OBJ getting traded your winter jacket, Baker. I know there's a lot of cool things you probably want. This is it. Good for OBJ, good for Minnesota, and good for the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield. If it happens. Oh, my gosh.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I'm not going to defend Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott had a party at his house, over 10 people. It's a bad look during coronavirus. Not going to defend him. I am, however, going to try to explain how he potentially could be thinking. Stephen Jones, Cowboys owner, along with Jerry, was not happy about it.
We certainly have communicated with Dak and Zeke, and I think they're certainly aware now of how sensitive these situations are, and I don't think you'll be seeing that anymore. There's certainly guys that we have the utmost respect for, and I certainly know they understand the sensitivity of, you know, of the situation we're in today. It's certainly very serious and something that certainly know they understand.
So Dak holds a party when he knows better. Dak also, according to this story, won't be participating in a virtual off-season program without a new deal. Dak is pushing back. When you own a restaurant, I happen to be in this business now, why do you give your best general manager a piece of the business? Because you get a different employee. When they have a little bit of juice, when they get dividend checks. You find a great GM in the restaurant business, you give them a piece of the ownership. Not a big piece, give him a piece because you get a different employee. Dak Prescott is the only guy not getting paid in Dallas. Do I believe if Dak had a $200 million contract today, he throws that party? No, I do not. He would have a different sense of responsibility. Dak Prescott now does not have a contract with the Cowboys. 40-24, two division titles, a playoff win. Linebacker got paid, running back 2 years early. I'm a quarterback, quarterback league. I know what you're saying, Colin, this makes no sense. It makes complete sense. Go to psychologists. Psychologists will tell you that when you work from home, which many people are doing, you need to get dressed, even wear a tie. Why is that? Because psychologists will tell you, I'm looking at reports here, that getting dressed signals to you a sense of responsibility, a sense of putting on suitable clothes. Instead of being in your PJs or warm-ups and you're knocking down Cheerios and you're doing your Zoom, wearing more official business-like clothes changes your attitude. So let me ask you this. If wearing different clothes, ask yourself, do you feel different if you went to a meeting in board shorts or a suit? Jerry Seinfeld wears a suit during stand-up. Why? Ask him. Makes him feel more authoritative, more professional. He's going to perform. He wants to look his best. Don't you feel better when you go out of the house and look really good? We all do. This is not a debate. So if that, just wearing clothes, is different for a man, an alpha male, you don't think an organization giving him respect and $250 million doesn't make him feel more responsible, more loved, more part of the team? When do people act out? When do you act out? When have I acted out? When I don't get my way. When I don't get my way, I'm not the same employee. I'm a good worker at Fox. They treat me well. They show me respect. If they didn't, can I guarantee I'd have the same 5 a.m. waking up every day, the same drive to work, the same attitude? People act out when they don't get what they want and they feel they've earned it. Dak is 40-24. He's got two division titles over well-run teams, legendary teams like the Giants and the Eagles. And he's the only damn guy not getting paid. I'm not saying this justifies what he did, but psychologists will tell you that wearing different serious clothes changes your attitude. Dak's got a contract. He doesn't throw that party. He feels more authoritative. He feels more loved. He feels like he is now the face of the franchise. He's saying right now, my running back got a deal. My linebacker, my defensive end, I don't have a contract. I'm not even part of you. He's pushing back. It's very human. We'd all do the same thing. When guys get mad or feel disrespected, you get a different man. So I could just bang on Dak today, but I get it. And I'm not, again, I am not. This is why you give a restaurant manager who's really good a piece of it, because you get a different employee. Dak doesn't have a contract. The whole damn team got paid early. He doesn't have a contract. He's pushing back. I get it. Don't love it, but I get it. And I've done it more than once in my life. And I'm older than him. I should know better. And I still don't, because I'm a guy.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Nick Wright, brought to you by Mercedes, the best or nothing, is joining us. Okay, so the story is today, OBJ, Minnesota. One of the things, I know you're close with OBJ, and though I've been critical of him, I do believe he, when he was surrounded by professionals at LSU and the New York Giants early in his career, he was a great pro. I don't think his personality is great with chaos. When the Giants got chaotic, he struggled. Cleveland defines chaos. I think Minnesota is sound, well-structured. I think it is great for him. Your takeaway on the news that's coming out that's not a done deal, but it's getting talked about.
Yeah, it would be a very savvy move for the Vikings in this regard. If you can get a first-round pick for Stephon Diggs and then obtain Odell Beckham Jr. for a second-round pick, you won both of those trades. So from as a pure value proposition, it makes sense. I don't know if I look at the Vikings and say their biggest need is wide receiver, even after losing Stephon Diggs. I would have thought they maybe would have tried to upgrade their line a little bit, or maybe deal with some of the departures from the defense. But you know where I stand on Odell. I think he's the most physically talented receiver in football. I think he's incredibly unfairly discussed in the media. I mean, I understand why folks want to come after him because he has, you know, a PED suspension and he got arrested this summer. I'm sorry, that was Julian Edelman, not Odell Beckham Jr. And so I, you know, I get him confused because they actually both were photographed sleeping in a bed with a strange woman, but we, again, we only talk about one. So I think it'd be great for the Vikings. I'd be bummed out if I'm Baker. But maybe the Browns feel like they have enough weapons and they would need more. They need more other assets on that team.
Oh, I think it's great for OBJ. And a lot of people think I don't like OBJ. I think he can be, you know, all these pro athletes are 24, 25, 26 years old. So at 25, 26 years old, I'm not the same guy today. So I think OBJ in the right fit is wonderful. And I tend to root for players that make my show more interesting. I want Baker in the league. I want OBJ in the league. I just don't think they work together. Now, I just defended. People will see it as defending Dak Prescott. You probably didn't hear it. But I said there's a reason that when you own a restaurant, you give your top manager a piece of the business because you get a different employee. So I think Dak is doing what people do when they don't get their way. Two division titles, 40-24, only guy on that team without a contract. And I think he's saying to himself, you're paying people years early. I don't have one. I'm not going to OTAs. And I think if he had $200 million in his pocket, he would see himself as a different employee. And I'm not defending him, but I'm trying to explain. He's pushing back. He feels he is delivered. Nick, if you were giving ratings for 4 years to a radio station and they wouldn't give you a contract but gave lesser important people on the radio station contracts, would you feel the same driving to work? You would not. Your takeaway on my theory on this.
Well, I think a lot of it's right, and I don't think that – listen, first of all, players who are under contract don't have to go to OTAs. The players negotiated for these to be optional or voluntary, and then they get publicly pressured by the media and the teams to go. But that guys who are under contract. Dak Prescott isn't even currently an employee of the Dallas Cowboys. They've offered him a contract. He has not signed the franchise tag. So it's his prerogative to do whatever he wants to do. But if I were advising him, I would say, listen, man, they've offered you a piece of the restaurant. Maybe not the piece you quite want. Maybe not the piece that the kid in Kansas City is going to get at his restaurant. But it's a pretty damn big piece, man. You got to consider taking it. Now, I'm more bird in the hand type of guy. Everywhere I've been where it's been offered, I sign contract extensions early. I'm like, nope. I like what I'm doing. I want to stay. I understand folks that say, I want to roll the dice and see how it goes. But I feel like Dak Prescott rolled the dice. He didn't crap out and he didn't, roll sevens. And he's still trying to negotiate as if he did. And so I feel like they're playing a dangerous game here on both sides. And Colin, I think at this point the Cowboys have to start at least internally discussing, would Miami give us the fifth pick for him? Like, is that available? Because if you haven't gotten a deal done in the last 14 months, why are you going to get it done in the next 90 days? Because July 15th is the deadline to sign into an extension, or else you're not allowed to. So I don't begrudge Dak. I think he's overvaluing himself slightly, but I don't know what changes here. One last quick point on this. In Dak's defense, he has looked around, and I think this is your point. The Cowboys have made their tackle, their guard, their center, their running back, and their wide receiver all got the biggest contracts in the history of their position at signing. And so Dak, I would assume, is like, that's just what we do around here, right? Like, everyone gets the biggest deal, so he feels it's his turn.
This story came out. Now, I know again, you're friends with OBJ, you're friends with Aaron Rodgers. I am not, of course. Everyone hates me. But so this story comes out. I'm going to defend Aaron Rodgers. Everybody's got a chip on their shoulder, right? He has a right to have a chip. He had to go to junior college. He dropped in the draft. He then went and sat for 3 years. Green Bay's never gotten him really consistently great defenses like Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. So there's a story out. The Packers may draft a quarterback with their first pick. And I think to myself, this is stupid. Aaron has earned the chip on his shoulder. Let's be honest. They overlooked him in college. They overlooked him in the draft. And he has not had the defenses of Russell or Tom. This is not a guy you need to poke in the ribs. He's still great for another 3 years minimum. Get him help. Do him a solid. Don't try to win the moment. This will not land well for Aaron. Nor, by the way, did Brady like Jimmy Garoppolo hovering over him. I think it's a mistake if they draft a quarterback, even though, you know, they may love one of these guys. But I'm going to defend Aaron on this. It would be stupid, and the team needs help, not a backup. Your thoughts?
Hey, you're 1,000% right. And I think it, just to be, because I want to be fair, it is fair to qualify me as a friend with Odell. I can't call Aaron a friend. I'd say I'm friendly, and I've talked to him a couple times.
Yeah.
He certainly likes me more than he likes you, but that isn't the case with most human beings. But no, that's absolutely right. Listen, here are the numbers that should matter to the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to give them a few of them. 74, that's the number of points you allowed to the Niners the two times you played them. 13, that's the number of times Aaron Rodgers was sacked or fumbled the football in the two times you played the Niners. 14-2, that was your record against everyone in football last year other than the Niners. 0-2, your record against the Niners. I say all that to say this. Every single move you make this offseason should be about how can we beat San Francisco? How can we make sure if we play them in the playoffs again, that game is in our building instead of theirs? How do we maximize the last part of the window of Aaron Rodgers' championship ability? Because they absolutely lucked out going from Favre to Rodgers via the 24th pick in the draft. You are not going to do that again. And so the idea that you would draft a player with a premium pick who you hope plays zero snaps this year is insanity. The whole point of sports is to win a championship. It's not to never be awful. Like, too many teams, it's like, well, we want to make sure we're never terrible. It is better to have one ring and then a few seasons in the wilderness than a bunch of 9-10 win seasons with first and second round playoff exits. Like, what do you think Jason Garrett and the Cowboys with Jerry Jones would have rather? If in his tenure, instead of having all those 8-8, 9-7 years, they could have won one Super Bowl and then bottomed out, or what they got. Like, the Packers, it would be, if I were Aaron, I would be livid if they drafted a quarterback with a first, second, or third round pick. I want someone to help me beat the San Francisco 49ers.
Very well stated. 2 minutes left. Joe Burrow got compared to LeBron James, and my head exploded yesterday. What did you make of that?
Listen, the number one pick in the NFL is not the number one pick in the NBA. Over the last 20 years, the average number one overall pick in the NBA is Blake Griffin. That's a first ballot Hall of Famer guy that has been a top five MVP candidate in his career. That median number one overall pick for the NFL draft is Alex Smith, a guy who played his best football on his second team. You have a half dozen to a full dozen, depending on how careers play out, Hall of Famers that went number one overall in the NBA over the last 20 years. In the last 25 years, if you draft a quarterback number one overall and his name's not Peyton or Eli Manning, he's not a Manning, you're not winning a Super Bowl with him. The idea that we're going to put these types of expectations on Burrow, A, it's unfair. I don't even need to get into the fact that you're comparing him to the greatest American athlete ever. It's unfair for the sport. And so it's just not how it works in the NFL. And I'm pretty sure we're going to have to go back and fact check this. I'm pretty sure LeBron was the best player in his draft class. I'm not even sure Burrow's the best player in his position in his draft class. I like the kid a lot, but come on. And by the way, one last thing, Colin. The day the Cavs won the draft lottery, an 18-year-old LeBron James said to a local television station, "I'm so excited to stay in Ohio. I can't wait to start winning and start a new winning tradition." Joe Burrow's been asked a million different times about what his plans are for his first year in the NFL. He said a million different words, and I'm not mad at him for this. But one word he's never said is Cincinnati or Bengals, because he desperately wants someone to trade up so he doesn't end up going there. So it's a very different situation.
This is a very good performance by you today. His name is Nick Wright. First things first, good talking to you, buddy.
You as well, Colin. I owe you a phone call. I'll talk to you soon. Good to talk to you as well, George. See you guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm not going to make predictions on what happens for sports in September. I think you sound ridiculous as a sportscaster, even a scientist or a doctor saying, here's what we're going to know September 10th. Doctors in our government have flipped their opinion on masks in 2 days. Nobody knows. There are going to be studies written about this COVID virus. Things you think are true are not true. I read a story yesterday that said, in your house, keep your doors open, turn off your air conditioning, let natural light in, air through your house, natural light is good for killing the coronavirus. And I live in California by a beach, so I've always got my doors open. And I've always got my curtains open. My wife likes the curtains open. So we have a lot of natural light in our house. We have wind blowing through it. And I'm like, oh, we're kind of lucky on that. We didn't have any idea. That was a study yesterday. They're doing studies on this thing every 2 weeks, every week, every day. So I'm not going to make any predictions. But Dr. Anthony Fauci, that's the smart guy who talks, 79-year-old guy, looks about 59, who talks next to Trump every day and really is the guy that, you know, knows what he's talking about. He says, listen, sports can happen, just can't be fans at it. But this centralized site, it can happen. So let me tell you this. First of all, 98% of sports fans do not go to games. They watch it on TV. TV is more important than stadiums for games. Number two, owners make more money on TV revenue than fans. So they're not going to lose sleep on this stuff. Number three is it's temporary. This is temporary. It's not going to happen forever. Never forget that networks can be really clever. World Cup games, Fox, we don't always send announcers to the games. They're in a small studio in L.A., broadcasting a game from another country. NBA China, when the NBA sends teams to China for preseason games, the announcers are in Atlanta in a small studio. Okay, so you don't, there's manipulation all the time by networks. They're very clever. I watched a Taiwanese baseball game yesterday. I watched highlights of it. They had implemented fans in certain portions of the stadium, cardboard, cutout fans, and I'm like, it's very clever. I'm not so sure the Fox Network, because we're by, you know, Hollywood, right next door, could not figure out or have a deal with a company that creates a digital illusion so it looks like fans. And we could always pump in crowd noise. That's easy. This is the kind of stuff networks do all the time. But secondarily, it's not a big ask to ask the NFL, hey, no fans. Have your team just stay in a hotel. There's only 8 road games a year in the NFL. The players can stay in their houses. There's only 8 road games a year. You already show up on Saturday morning. You'll still show up on Saturday morning. Nothing will change with the schedule. NBA teams may have to ask their players to stay for 2.5 months in one hotel in one city. That's a big ask. Hockey, baseball. Can you guys stay in like 3 cities in Florida and Texas for 4 or 5 months away from your families? That's a big ask. The NFL would not change a thing. There'd just be no fans. You guys still go about it every day at practice. Take temperatures. They're not asking you to stay in a unique hotel situation, be away from your families in a unique family separation situation. NFL's the great thing about the NFL. There's not that many games. There's only 8 road games. And again, I don't think Kirk Cousins came out yesterday for the Vikings, and he said, honestly, play the sound of Kirk Cousins yesterday talking about playing with no fans.
Honestly, we practice every day in an empty grass area. We pump in fake crowd noise for away games. But more often than not, you're used to, you know, OTA practices don't have a lot of pomp and circumstance to them. So honestly, to go out and just play the game would kind of be refreshing and breath of fresh air to just know that, you know, we don't have to have all the smoke and the fire. We can just go play football.
Our top infectious disease expert in America, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says it would work. He goes, he said, listen, all you have to do is have a single site, like a Vegas for the NBA, fan-free, it works. Well, the NFL wouldn't even have to do that. The NFL would not even have to do that. They would have no different situation for teams, traveler, fans at all. The difference, the only thing would be different, fans can't go to games. And I still contend this. There's a lot of positives that are going to come out of this, like no more handshaking. I'm all for that. Always thought it was weird to shake hands with strangers. But I think we're going to live in a masked society for the next year or so. I'm all right. I go jog. I'm going to go jogging today. I have a mask around. When I see somebody coming, I pull it up. When I go past them, I pull it down. It's okay. I think stadiums from this point forward for the next calendar year, we wear masks. Well, okay. And maybe people sit two seats apart. I'm okay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I saw a story today. I snickered at it. That's a word I don't use much. NFL.com. 2020 NFL Draft, C.D. Lamb, receiver Oklahoma, among seven can't-miss prospects. Oh, really? Really, can't miss. Okay. Chase Young, C.D. Lamb, Joe Burrow, Isaiah Simmons, who doesn't have a position, Tua, Justin Herbert, and Jerry Jeudy. You do get they could all bust because there's this thing in the NFL called injuries and really bad organizations. Did you see Odell Beckham's numbers last year? You do get he's better than that. You do get Brady is better because he was in New England. You do get Carson Palmer in New England's numbers would have been way better than Carson Palmer in Cincinnati. Okay. Everybody can bust. I love Chase Young. He had zero sacks in his last three college games. Zero. Zero sacks. Eight tackles total. Jerry Jeudy goes to Jacksonville. He can't bust. Joe Burrow, Cincinnati, gets the living you-know-what beat out of him for 3 years. By the way, he had one great college year. Average arm, small hands. Can't bust. All right. Now, I do think C.D. Lamb is a player that is overvalued. But I would also admit if he goes to Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes or Seattle with Russell Wilson or Philadelphia with Carson Wentz, he's going to have a really good career. Because where does he land? If he lands with a good quarterback and a smart coach, CeeDee Lamb's going to be a nice player. I don't call guys busts. I have twice. Tim Tebow and Johnny Manziel. All you guys did was give me crap. But here, I'll give you a reason and go ahead and push back on your local radio show in Oklahoma. Carrie doesn't know anything. Many first-round wide receivers, more than any position, bust. Because they are beholden to good coaches and good quarterbacks. The last five drafts, there's been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 first-round receivers. Amari Cooper has been worth it. Mike Williams, when he's healthy, appears worth it. The rest of them are bust. Underachieved or not as good as a first-round player should be. I don't know about Marquise Brown. I think he could be special. It is the bust position in the first round. It is the position, number one. Secondly, I think he is a thin-framed player who was not challenged because this year in the Big 12, of the 25 best cornerback prospects, three are from the Big 12. And CeeDee Lamb faced the very best one, TCU's Jeff Gladney. And he shut his arse down. Two catches, 16 yards. The one corner he faced in that conference, who is really good, TCU guy, shut CeeDee Lamb down. Thin, long CeeDee Lamb. By the way, he has a great college coach who schemed him wide open on most plays. NFL ain't the Big 12, brother. It ain't a pillow fight. SEC looks a lot like the NFL. Big 12 looks like the CFL on a bad day. So CeeDee Lamb got his act shut down against the best corner he faced. And it wasn't a blowout game. They needed CeeDee Lamb. They needed him. Guy shut him down. Me just saying that, not calling him a bust, saying I think he's overvalued. Me giving you proof that wide receiver is the bust position first round. I'll get nothing but crap.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I've made no predictions on the virus. I said 2 months ago, 7, 8 weeks ago, I said it's going to last a lot longer than people are projecting. It's going to be spring, summer, or more. People were projecting 4 weeks. I said 4 months is closer. The other thing I said is social distancing works. Don't be a meathead. I still contend the only thing we truly, absolutely know, including epidemiologists, social distancing works. So just avoid people. Wear a mask. There's a lot of predictions by sportscasters who shouldn't be making them that things aren't going to happen in September. We don't have any idea. Chris Fowler actually has a source on this and said college football could be moved. Two things could happen. It could be moved back or all the way back to the spring, delayed maybe to October or pushed back to the spring. Here's Chris Fowler, works at the other place.
There's a third scenario that's gaining momentum and that on the surface might sound preposterous, but I think a lot of reasonable people feel like it might be the most prudent course of action, and that's football in the spring, beginning at some point in February into March, April, May. Maybe you have the postseason in June. That would have to be reshuffled a bit. It would be bizarre. It would wreak havoc on some other sports in that time of year, but to avoid the financial disaster of having no football season in the academic year, I think it might be a fallback position.
I think that's good for college football. If you told me today college football gets rid of September, I'd be like, all right. September in college football is the weakness of the sport. October, November, December, January, I love it. September's a bad joke. Last September, 300 games, most irrelevant, most lopsided. There were three ones that I tuned to and loved. Auburn, Oregon, Georgia, Notre Dame, LSU, Texas. Rest was mostly junk. Schedule fillers to get extra home games. And people say that if you did college football and said you got to play everybody in your conference, everybody plays 9 to 10 games, and you start late September, early October, I'm for it. I think the sport's totally inefficient. I think the NCAA, I don't bag on them, but I think they're totally inefficient. I'll give you a little secret about the NCAA. Whenever I push back on why do you play all these crappy games that are useless, here's what I hear from athletic directors. Well, because we need 7 home games to pay for all the other sports. So you're telling me your economic system in college sports is so fragile, it's like Jenga. If you pull out one block, a game against Panera Bread, the whole thing tumbles, then you got a crappy economic system. Fix it. If the entire system of college football, the economic infrastructure is based on getting another home football game that's a ripoff for your fans, then your system sucks. Get a new one. Here's a little cheat sheet for you. The minimum number of volleyball games required by the NCAA is 19, but yet everybody in the Mountain West plays minimum 30. Why? Nobody goes to the games. College baseball, softball, minimum number 27. Teams play almost double that. Why? Nobody goes to the games. I've gone to Pac-12 baseball games in the last 2 years because I have a friend's son who plays. There's nobody there. It's parents. Fencing programs. Water polo. They travel all over the place. Why? Nobody goes to the games. Maybe you don't need 42 athletic programs. Maybe you can have them, but you don't have a travel schedule putting teams on planes. The whole system depends on USC playing one more home game against Fresno. That's the system. Alabama getting 2 home games against Western Carolina. That's the system. How about a new system? Stop having 38 programs. Nobody goes to 34 of them. Have men's and women's basketball, men's and women's baseball, softball. Have football. You know, you figure out in your region what matters. College baseball is big in the South. All right, we have college baseball. College hockey is big in the Northeast. Let's have college hockey and a women's program. Whatever. Title IX. But the idea that oh, my God, I'm hearing all these athletic directors. Oh, we'd have to shorten the season. We wouldn't get an extra home game. Get a new economic system. If that's it, it's like all these airlines. These airlines have a bad 2 weeks. We're broke. If your margins are that thin, cut your flights. I mean, seriously. It's some of these businesses bellyaching, and NCAA, and I don't pick on you. If you need an extra home game to make it all work, that's on you. You got a bad system. You got these 40 volleyball games, you know, 50 baseball games. You really need to travel that much? You know how expensive it is to just, you know how expensive it is to fly a family, my family, to Hawaii? Can you imagine flying teams places? You ever look at the bill to fly your family on vacation? It's like, ugh. Imagine traveling 48 baseball players and coaches.